Back in the studio after a couple of interviews and a couple of days in Mobile Podcast Command. Time for some random thoughts that I have had over the last few days that I kind of made some notes, and we're going to do that in podcast 875, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, you guys have heard me talk about fitness together a couple of times in these podcasts. This is my sponsor that does private personalized training and nutrition. And usually what I do is I went out and recorded a bunch of people at the gym and elsewhere who are Fitness Together clients to talk about the experience. But I'm actually going to talk about an experience of a friend of mine and why she is interested in Fitness Together very quickly without telling too many tales and revealing the person. But this is a person that has, I'm not going to say struggled with weight, because this is a very strong-willed and strong person who, because of some health issues over time, has gotten sort of sideways on the whole diet thing. And she actually called Fitness Together to do a consultation, because what she's interested in is the DNA test for nutrition, because she's finding all these different fad diets. You know, I hate to include keto in that, but keto is very complicated and it doesn't always work with people in terms of losing weight. And so Fitness Together, one of the things they offer is this DNA testing for nutrition, because as you know, they do personalized training and nutrition. Well, Fitness Together is perfect for my friend because they have private training rooms. There's no waiting or distractions. You make your own schedules, but you get a great trainer and a qualified trainer, and it's private, and there's time efficiency in the workout, because they know at Fitness Together that everybody is unique. Whether you have a high level of fitness, you're just starting out, or you're just, you know, somebody who's been injured and you got to get back, or you need to start working out to optimize your health, Fitness Together is for you. Fitness Together in Maple Grove at 763-494-0061, or at Dina at 952-927-0300, fitnesstogether.com, or click on the Fitness Together banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com, because that takes you to a contact page where you can choose a Dina or Maple Grove depending on where you are in the metropolitan area here in Minneapolis and St. Paul. They're nationwide, of course, but remember, Fitness Together at fitnesstogether.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Got to get my pitch in for DepoStar, the American manufacturer. You heard us talking on the last two podcasts about foreign manufacturing and the fact that companies are actually bringing their manufacturing back to the United States. If this is you and you are in the decision-making chain when it comes to manufacturing, don't forget DepoStar, 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 American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. Visit DepoStar at DepoStar.com. Yeah, you know, just like everybody, you know, different things occur to me at different times, and usually these thoughts just kind of pass through, and, you know, I'm looking for some kind of hook as I read through the news or something like that that I can talk about. And obviously, if you've done almost 1,000 podcasts and been on the radio for years, you know, it gets harder and harder to find this unique thing that you want to talk about, and sometimes you just got to jump right in. And I have different things that I do. Sometimes I record my own voicemails and send them to myself, or record voice memos. And sometimes just write little things down, and other times just kind of sit down and just quickly review some random thoughts. And that's what we're going to do in this podcast. So here's, I'm going to start with the last two podcasts, which were the interviews with my friend, you know, Tom Emmer, who's now a congressman. We did a morning show. And, you know, when I promote content on different social media platforms, I use different narratives. And on LinkedIn, which I'm becoming quite a fan of, because LinkedIn is a business platform, I generally use content in promoting the podcast that is related to business. And one of the things I said on LinkedIn on one of those podcasts I did with Tom in the last week was this, I think it was the 40-minute one where I had Tom on the issues for 40 minutes. And I said that this would have been impossible on the radio. In fact, both of those podcasts would have not been possible on the radio, largely because of the formatic structure of radio stations these days. And I think that's a great place to start, because some people were like, you know, he's not getting into any of the issues, or he's not. And I said in the podcast, I'm not here to argue with Tom. I'm here to get Tom on the record. And so there's two podcasts. There's one where we got reacquainted and we kind of shuck and jive like we used to on the radio at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then in the second, we did get in on a few of the issues, and I think key issues, particularly as it pertains to the U.S. House races for 2020. But then later in the second podcast, Tom was on the issues for 40 minutes. So it's an opportunity to talk about the mission of these podcasts a little bit, and I think it's important to talk about this a little bit. Even though Tom kind of was kind and said, I never thought of you as a partisan, I said I was pretty partisan, you know, on the radio. And I think part of that is being driven by the audience to be partisan. One of the things that I have learned in podcasting is being a partisan and grinding, as I call it, grinding the partisan or political axe to convince you of A, B, or C, or to tell you some, piece of information that is just overwhelmingly biased, something along those lines, is not what I want to do. And I see, I watch what my friends do, and I see what my friends do in talk radio and online. And it's always interesting to me that people feel as though I will just say this. I won't say how they feel. I will say that I think that today for me, it's being free of being driven by wanting to be something or being something in a specific political or social construct. I have biases. I'm pretty honest about my biases, especially when I'm doing a political podcast to talk about my biases. But I think the biggest problem is the wanting to or being in a political construct. It's wanting to be accepted by some group or being driven by an audience. This is especially important that causes this need to be, be presenting and or defending or attacking a certain point of view. I don't feel that advances the story anymore. I also don't feel under an obligation to provide equal time. We certainly in podcasting were not provided the option of doing that, although I am going to go to Iowa and cover Democratic events because I think that's really an interesting story. I don't feel for people who think, oh, you're supposed to do equal time and this, that. We don't have those kinds of obligations. That's a federal regulation or a perception of a federal regulation at what is largely a deregulated media industry today. If they want to give you equal time, they can. They're not under really, as far as I understand, a specific obligation along those lines. So the mission of these podcasts is to bring up and discuss issues and ideas that challenge the subscribers and listeners to think for themselves, not necessarily to agree, not necessarily to debate, but to try to bring out ideas that I think about and living my life through these podcasts on the air, so to speak, as opposed to me telling you what's going to happen or what we should do or we shouldn't do. And, you know, I don't need to go into too much detail, but the reality is, you know, you advocate for these things, meaning you, whoever you are doing a podcast or doing your own media or being on the radio or whatever it is, you know, you advocate for these things and your guys get elected and then something else entirely different happens, and you're stuck holding the bag, basically defending that. And I learned a long time ago, that your expectations of what is going to happen aren't what is going to happen. What's going to happen is something completely different that you are probably not prepared for. And I would say this is probably true with virtually all of the partisan commentators. The fact is they just don't care. You know, they don't bear or feel that they're responsible in any way for convincing people to think a certain way. And they don't care necessarily about the outcomes as long as they get their little slice of the pie. I don't give a damn about that. I'm more motivated by ideas and interests and not living. And I don't want to live in a social construct, and I don't want to live in a political construct. I do not want to tell you there's going to be a recession or there isn't going to be a recession. I can certainly talk about the potential, but you're the person who has to ultimately decide whether you think there's going to be this, that, or the other thing. And there's way too much of this telling people how to think in this country as though you are children and can't think for yourselves. Now, maybe you can't think for yourself. Maybe you want to hear what you want to hear and only what you want to hear. But I would say most people don't want to be thought of as that kind of a person and being told what to think or being manipulated into thinking a certain thing. And I'm not doing that. And that's the mission of these podcasts. So when I talk to somebody like Tom Emmer, you know, if I don't challenge him, it's not because I agree with him or disagree with him. It's because what I'm doing is getting him on the record. Same thing with the stuff that I'll do from Iowa in February, and I'm just getting ready to head out on the road here, which I'll talk about shortly, to go through Ohio and southern Indiana to kind of get an idea of the feel of the ground, so to speak. And I'll talk about that in a second. But the idea is to say, this is what's going on. You have to make your own judgments about it, similar to the pipeline protest, even though I had editorial comments. And I'm free. I don't have any problem making an editorial comment or doing a commentary on something when I identify my biases. But the objective is to say, here's what's going on. You decide for yourself. I'm not going to advocate for a candidate or not advocate for a candidate. And I think people on certain ends of the political spectrum, and I would imagine it's true on both sides, they get irritated when someone doesn't tell them what they expect to hear. Or they get irritated when they're not hearing what they expect to hear or what they want to hear. I'm just not going to do that anymore. I think our job in terms of being creators, and I'm talking about podcasters and artists and writers and so forth, is to progress. And we can't be bound by an audience. Most of the great artists have always done things that upset their audiences and garnered new audiences for new ideas. And if you don't progress as a human being, then what good are you? And I'm talking about in the creative realm. If you don't change the way you paint, everybody knows Picasso used to paint pictures. And then he broke free from that construct. And that's when most of the art that he did that was highly respected came about. I'm not a big fan of Picasso's in terms of art, but there's no doubt and there's no denying his success along those lines. When you look at, another sort of realm would be popular music. We all know that certain artists broke from their previous incantations or their previous incarnations. And a good example is probably Elton John. If you're old enough to remember, Elton John's first albums were almost folk music, more like Van Morrison and more of the kind of the blues, kind of English blues rock folk realm. And he broke free of that with Caribou. And everybody was like, what's this? This whole, shiny purple suit wearing glasses, weird Benny and the Jets guy. But that was the beginning of Elton John's dominance of the pop music scene. He became much more pop and lots of his people didn't like it. But it was the beginning of a much wider, audience for him. I'm not trying to get a wider audience so much as to say I am not going to be driven by the constructs of an audience. That's the worst thing for someone who is an artist to feel as though they have to be driven by the constructs of an audience. You know, if we are doing our job, then we're basically taking information in from the ethos and interpreting it our own way. When you're fighting for a specific point of view, especially politically or socially, you're shutting that down. You're not allowing yourself to take in information and come to your own conclusions. So when I do random thoughts podcasts like this one, you'll hear that I think about all kinds of things now because I'm not thinking, oh, what's the latest thing that Trump has done that I've got to talk about in my podcast today? And that's the whole thing about why certain things aren't possible on the radio anymore, because they are driven entirely by their audiences. And as the audiences get older and smaller, they are becoming more and more brittle and more reflective of that audience. And I don't want to be that way. So if you didn't like the Tom Emmer podcast, too bad. You probably won't like the podcast from Iowa with the Democrats. On the other hand, you might. It's just an interesting, and why? Because that's going to be a very interesting story down there, because that's where all the energy is. The reverse was true in 2016, covering the primaries and caucuses in Iowa, because it's a caucus, actually, because that all of the energy was on the Republican side. This time, the reverse is true. So we'll get to that when we get to that. Anyway, yeah, I forgot to mention that I do appreciate people listening to the Bob Davis podcast right off the page at the Bob Davis podcast.com. There's streaming audio, plus you can choose individual podcasts, play them on the player. You can also subscribe to the podcast feed there. A lot of people use PodSearch or Podbean or these Podcatcher, which are apps that go find podcasts, then bring them to your phone. Those work great. Also, I recommend Spotify for Android devices, Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. Of course, iTunes, the granddaddy, and the podcast app on your iOS if you have the new iOS, a new phone. I do appreciate the likes and the shares in social media. I have been de-emphasizing the comments because they don't do anything for me. I did a podcast about it. That's one you can actually go to the BobDavisPodcast.com and listen to. And so anyway, I appreciate really what helps me are the RTs on Twitter and the shares, because that gets that podcast notification out to your network, and that helps me. And I appreciate your donations for Mobile Podcast Command. Thank you, Jill. $75. That is awesome. I'm going to be heading out here in about a week or two to head across the middle part of the country, Indiana and Ohio, to find out what's going on there. More about that later in future podcasts. Hey, one more thing. I hate my printer because I hate paying for print cartridges. What does that mean? Well, let me tell you, if this is you, and I know it is because you have the same experience. I got so mad. They were like, do you want to become part of the, you know, special whatever they do when they give you the card and you're part of the club and you get discounts? And I said, no, because I'm never coming back in here, because I'll tell you, the only reason I come here is for print cartridges, and they're ridiculously expensive. Well, there is a new way, and that is Cartridge World in Maple Grove, Minnesota. 30% off of those print cartridges compared to big box stores, and they are guaranteed to perform as good as new. The other thing is, if you're in business for yourself and you hate your printers, because I know they're driving you crazy, Cartridge World can give you a new printer depending on whether you qualify. So you should check it out. Free delivery on qualifying orders as well. Cartridge World in Maple Grove, Minnesota, off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway. Here's the number, 763-420-6632, 763-420-6632. Ask for Jason or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Well, it is November, and it's Veterans Day on the recording of this podcast. And by the way, Veterans Day is the day that you thank veterans for their service, not Memorial Day. Memorial Day is to memorialize those who have fallen in defense of their country and in war, not to say, hey, thanks for your service. This is the day that you say thanks for your service. So that's all for the veterans. But it's November, and November, we're sort of heading into this time when we kind of start shutting down for winter. And the proper, I mean, in terms of the old days, there wasn't much you could do outside when it was cold, so people kind of hunkered down in their huts or in their teepees or in their little houses out on the prairie to just kind of mend socks and clothes and sit in front of the fire and make babies and that sort of thing. And so that's kind of where we're headed. But another thing that happened in November, and I'm just going to play this real quick because I want to, is this really compelling story for those of us in Minnesota of the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early.
So in Minnesota, we think about this, and I've read a bunch of books about this. I happened to visit a friend who had at one point a bunch of these books on the Edmund Fitzgerald because he was fascinated with it. And he said, just take them, you know, go, take them home and read them. And thank you, Jack. And I took them home and I read all of them. And it is an amazing, fascinating story of really a human-induced failure, pushing too hard, having a ship that was not quite able to carry the load that it had, and on and on and on, and also misreading the weather and any number of other things. So it's a great story. And so in this time of the year, it was November 10th. What was it? Sometimes in this, I want to say it was 79, but it might have been earlier than that. 75 or something when the Edmund Fitzgerald went down. I don't remember the year. I just remember the ship going down, and it's one of those things to reflect on at this time of the year. So yeah, random thoughts in the last few days that I want to get to real quickly in this podcast because I don't want to go on for 40 minutes. And this is where I, sitting in my chair, this is where I was. I was thinking about this. And, you know, one of the problems with this is doing this kind of thing is you think a thought, you think, well, that'd make a great podcast. And then you start talking to yourself or you start writing it down or whatever, and it kind of falls apart. And so when I think about podcasts, I have to go over this ground quite a lot in order to kind of come down to the thing that I was thinking about. This never approaches the thought, which means the thought was either faulty to begin with, or it's just hard to approximate what's going on in your head by simply talking. But, you know, today we hear a lot of talk about consciousness these days, especially in the so-called New Age community. Our consciousness is increasing. Human beings are evolving. There's a 3D world versus the 5D world. And if we can move into a new dimension, we can quantum jump into a new dimension. And all the really evolved people will eventually make this shift, leaving those behind who are not evolved. And if you want to evolve, these are the things you have to do, and so forth. This idea of interdimensional worlds, which is based on string theory, by the way, and string theory, you know, big topic in New Age. I hate to call New Age a science because it isn't. New Age patois, let's just say that. In the New Age patois, they talk about string theory. It's part of the lexicon of the New Age community, string theory. But string theory is actually, you know, I looked it up, and string theory, this is the theory that suggests that there's multiple dimensions, which there may be, but string theory has largely been discredited, and I'll just leave it at that. I'll have to do a podcast on it sometime, and I was kind of surprised to see that, but I was going down the rabbit hole the other day, which means thinking about something and looking it up, and I came to the conclusion that human nature, and I've thought this for a while, so this isn't any kind of a new conclusion. And I don't want this to sound negative either. I don't want this to sound like some horrible thing, that human nature really hasn't changed at all, I don't think, since human beings have been on the planet. Yes, we are smarter. Yes, we have deeper reflections. We certainly have better education on details. We have certainly made progress with science and tools and language, things of that nature. We may even have deeper reflections than we perhaps had in other times, simply because we have the leisure time to have those reflections, because we're not beating our head against the wall in some factory, although some people are. Or on the farm, or in a coal mine, or something to that extent, to the population extent that existed 150 or 200 years ago, or 300 years ago. People didn't have a lot of time for vigorous reflection because they were too busy trying to stay alive, I think. Although someone told me recently, well, they still reflected. They just may not have reflected at the level that we do today. We call that navel, you know, staring at your navel, so to speak. So yeah, I think we still struggle to define reality and spirit, but consider this, more people, I was thinking about this because I watched this documentary on, which I highly recommend, I think it was on Showtime, called The Trade. You know, when I was sick, I was watching all these documentaries just because there was nothing else to do. You know, you can't think, so you just sit there. The Trade is a phenomenal documentary about the drug problem in this country, whether it's opioid addiction or the cartels. We just saw in the current time frame this incredible massacre by cartel members against these Mormon people that were traveling in SUVs, and they think that the cartels thought the SUVs were, you know, a rival gang, and they just killed all the children, adults, and everything else. Plus, a couple of weeks before, we saw the Mexican army actually defeated by the cartels, and there's extraordinary video footage on YouTube. Go to YouTube and type in Mexican cartel, cartel defeats the Mexican army, blah, 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 blah. It's really amazing to watch it. You could be watching a battle in Syria, and yet it is just south of the border here in North America. So pretty interesting. Anyway, you know, the numbers, if you talk about advancement of human nature, you would think that if we were truly advanced, we wouldn't need other kinds of stimulation. Consider this. There are more people addicted to drugs in this country than download a podcast every week. And several million people, 30, 40 million people download a podcast every week, more every month. But 30 million people, and that's a conservative estimate, 30 million people in this country are addicted to drug. 20 to 30 million people plus take antidepressant medications, which are prescribed, which are actually more powerful than some of the illegal drugs. 20 to 30 million people in this country take opioids. The illegal drug business is estimated to take in $100 billion per year, which I think is low. Think about that. That's $100. You want to know where all the money's going? You want to know why we're printing money? What happens when we print money? Now, I'm not saying the Fed is sending $100 billion, but what it says is that there's $100 billion per year and probably more than that leaving the country in this illicit trade for things like methamphetamine. Amphetamines, opioids, fentanyl is a perfect example of an opioid, dangerous drugs like that, Molly, etc. The legal pharmacy business, including drug sales, is something like $423 billion. Obviously, that includes drugs for diseases, but we spend $210 billion a year on antidepressants. If you put all that together into some reasonable statistical package, it's difficult to do because it's overlapping, but think about the overall effects of that. Why, if we're so advanced, do we need all of these drugs? Why do we need tobacco, CBD oil, marijuana, opioids, things of that nature? If we were so advanced, wouldn't we be able to do pain management without that for people who actually are, you know, on opioids for, prescriptions, not to mention the people that use them in terms of recreational drugs or alcohol for that matter. So what are the top health issues in this country? Here's just one list if you do a search. Obesity, physical inactivity, poor nutrition, substance use disorders. And if you label this opioid crisis, it's the number one health issue in the U.S. But let's not forget alcohol, which is probably, in terms of long-term health issues, alcohol. Even moderate use of alcohol is the most dangerous drug there is. And people underestimate the overall long-term negative health benefits of alcohol. I would say that many of the cancers, many of the heart problems, many of the cardiovascular problems in our country are caused by over the long term alcohol abuse. Alcohol abuse would be having more than one glass of wine a day. Alcohol abuse would be drinking a six pack of beer on the weekend. Believe it or not, those kinds of things over a lifetime can cause an awful lot of other problems. So then when you get into physical inactivity and obesity and so forth, that's a big deal. And then, you know, we talk about access to healthcare, which I used to poo-poo. But because of the insurance situation and the costs of, health insurance, we call it healthcare in the political sphere, but it's not care, it's the insurance, access to health care. Insurance, and therefore health care, is another huge problem. Finally, mental health. And finally, suicide. So virtually all of these things are preventable, especially the stuff at the top of that list. And when you look at mental and physical health in the United States, the most advanced and developed country in the world, supposedly, my conclusion is we haven't progressed at all. If you look at the rest of the world in terms of the other things going on, whether it is excessive government overreach, in places like China and North Korea and parts of Europe, the question of whether we've actually progressed as human beings is very interesting. And it isn't the fault of our system or any person in particular. It's just human nature is human nature. And in other ages, many of the people afflicted with some of those problems would never have made it far enough to be diagnosed with those problems. But there it is. Some other thoughts. We live longer, therefore we see these things. I also think we are, really at a dearth for spiritual. We are a hunger for spiritual and life direction, and we don't know where to turn. The institutions like the churches have failed us. Government tends to fail us. And yet there is so much pablum and BS inspirational quotes online. I did at our little networking group, I did the inspirational quotes for a while every day, and it got to be really difficult to find what I considered to be inspirational quotes. Almost all of them are, of if a tree falls in the forest variety, and even that's more inspirational than most of this crap that I see on Instagram that people put up. Or, sometimes I find myself reading these things going, what the hell does that mean? Then we get into bad advice and quote, I'm not going to say quote unquote, I would say useless spirituality and phantasmagoric predictions about a moment in time that will transform the world and human nature. This has been going on since time immemorial. You read about the ancient Greeks or the Indians or the Chinese going back to before Christ, and these predictions about the world and these fantastic statements about being able to transcend this reality are nothing new. And it isn't depressing so much to me, but we just don't want to think about that too much. We don't want to think too much about the I don't want to say childish nature of our existence, because that's not fair, because we deal with adult problems and we deal with adult issues. But most of us, and I include myself in this, especially when you start thinking about things like, these predictions about horoscopes or, different dimensions and things of that nature, and I dabble in all that. In a sense, it's kind of childish because you can't prove it. You just want to believe that something is true. And then finally, we have this whole problem in our society of who's right and who's wrong and what direction works. You can't trust anything that you hear. You can't be sure of anything that you read or see. And yet, all around us are failing institutions. The police, the churches, the banks, the federal institutions, the government, and so on. Many things that have been around for 100 years or more are still features, literal institutions of our society. And you got to ask yourself whether or not they still work. So the final thought here is, if we could put new ideas to work, what would they be? All right, thanks for listening to Podcast 875, the Bob Davis Podcast. Just some random thoughts and a question. And we're back on the horse. So happy November, and get ready for winter. Poop. All the leaves are brown. Church, I passed along.